You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Slavery is back.
Welcome to a place where private business profit from a captive labour force, yet pennies are spent on medical services to a population in which the Indigenous, the poor and the mentally ill are overrepresented. Where isolation, humiliation, and degradation are facts of life. Welcome to prison.
It depends who's telling the story, I suppose. The prisoners would have one view. The people who work in the prison system would have another. And I think it's up to people to decide where the truth is.
Give government propaganda and the media spin doctors the flick. And check out Doin' Time for news, views and tunes on prison issues from Guantanamo Bay to Christmas Island, to prisons and detention centres everywhere. Every Monday at 4pm on your community radio, 3CR.
We are still fired up and we're still talking about revolution.
Hello and welcome to the Doin' Time Show. This is 3CR Community Radio, 855am on the dial. Streaming live on www.3cr.org.au. And a warning that this episode of Doin' Time contains audio descriptions of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who have died and discussion of deaths in custody. This is Marissa and I'll be with you for the next hour. Joining us on the show, first of all, we have Monique Hurley, Associate Legal Director, and Sahini Mita, Senior Lawyer from the Human Rights Law Centre, who will discuss the proposed adult time for violent crime bill and how this undermines Victoria's human rights obligations, both under international law and Victoria's own Charter of Human Rights, which provides that children should be treated in an age-appropriate way. Then we will bring you an interview with Karen Fletcher, CEO of Flatout, which is an independent, not-for-profit, community-based organisation that aims to prevent women and trans and gender diverse people from entering and returning to prison. Karen will give an update on the recent housing rally that was organised and also speak about the work of Flatout, focusing on criminalised women. Finally, we will hear from Lee Carney, CEO of Youth Law, who will give some more background about the Victorian government's proposed overhaul of the youth justice system, describing it as rushed, punitive, and dangerously out of step with evidence-based approaches to reducing youth crime. The Human Rights Law Centre condemns the Allan government for proposing children as young as 14 be locked away for life in Victoria. The proposed adult time for violent crime bill will mean that children aged 14 and above will face adult sentences in adult courts for a number of offences and will remove the rule that prison for children is the last resort. I'm delighted to welcome Monique and Sahini to the show. And here they are. Welcome, both of you.
Hi, Marissa. How are you?
Hello. Now, Monique and Sahini, you've both come through?
Yes, I'm Monique and I'm here, yes.
Wonderful. Sahini, have I pronounced your name correctly?
Yeah, all good.
That's lovely. Now, it has been an absolute atrocity, hasn't it, that this is happening, this bill is happening. Who would like to start and talk about background to what's happened? Because to me, this sounds like it's not very good evidence-based policy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm happy to start and explain what the announcement was. We haven't seen the legislation yet, but what we understand from the announcement is that the Allan government is planning to push kids who are 14 years and over into adult courts to face adult prison sentences for certain crimes. And the laws would also remove the rule that jail for children is the last resort for other crimes that will still be heard in the children's court. So that all means a sentence of imprisonment is going to be much more likely for kids, and it also means that sentences for kids, if these laws are passed, would be much longer. So the maximum length of the prison sentence in the children's courts at the moment is about 3 years, but the sentences are much longer in the adult court. It's also really concerning that the government is planning to increase the maximum sentences for certain offences so that kids could actually face life in prison for those offences. Those offences are aggravated home invasion and aggravated carjacking. And, you know, that's a tougher penalty than the 25-year maximum term for rape and manslaughter.
Sounds like reactionary politics to me.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's interesting, Monique and Sahini, how there's been a lot of media reports and a lot of demonisation of youth and saying, how can we keep our community safe? Now, community safety is paramount importance, and we don't want our homes broken into, of course not. But would it be fair to say that a lot of this has not worked in other jurisdictions? And what about reoffending when they come out as adults?
Yeah, so you're right, Marissa. The evidence...
this is Monique,
from... Yes, it is Monique. And thank you so much for having us on. It's always lovely to chat to you, but it's always in really bleak circumstances like this when you have us on. So maybe next time we can come on with some good news. But for the moment, we're stuck with this really shameful development and an attempt at really cheap political point scoring by the Allen government. As you're right, it follows a trend of, you know, demonising children across the country. Particularly, we've seen laws like this. They've really been copied from the racist handbook of the Crisafulli government in Queensland. And they, you know, they really undermine community safety in terms of pipelining more and more kids into prisons where they're subjected to the range of carceral tools that exist in that environment and really undermine any rehabilitative purpose that prisons might serve. And then, yeah, the link between that and going on to reoffend in future is really well documented. And I think, yeah, if the Premier was really serious about community safety and looking after children, she'd be following the evidence and really urgently investing in the supports like housing, healthcare and community-led programs that are what actually helps children avoid contact with the criminal legal system in the first place.
And indeed, won't it also exacerbate the state's mass imprisonment crisis, not to mention the number of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children who'll be over-incarcerated?
Definitely, and we know, this is Sahini here, by the way, we know that First Nations children are already significantly over-incarcerated, and that's because of the ongoing impacts of colonisation, systemic racism and discriminatory policing. And the planned changes would only deepen this injustice and harm First Nations kids further. And we think it's really hypocritical that the government can actually celebrate Treaty one day and then push the laws like this the next. Treaty is, you know, meant to be about forging a new self-determined path for First Nations people in Victoria, and these laws were announced without working with Aboriginal community-controlled organisations and will disproportionately harm First Nations communities. And we know that also because this isn't the first time this year that the Allen government has introduced, you know, punitive tough-on-crime laws. The recent bail laws in Victoria, which were introduced this year, will increase, you know, the likelihood of locking First Nations kids away before trial and before sentencing, and they've already had that disproportionate impact on First Nations kids who really just need self-determined, community-led support, not imprisonment.
Absolutely. And in fact, these proposed laws come too after the Allen government recently announced they'd reopen the decommissioned Malmesbury Youth Prison to lock away more children. So does that mean that services will be defunded?
It's Monique here, and so services have already been defunded in the last state budget. The Allan government defunded a number of targeted services that were aimed at children and helping them avoid criminal contact with the criminal legal system at that time. And so we were like, I don't even know what the right word is to describe how enraged and disappointed we were to hear that the Allan government is going to reopen the decommissioned Mums Reuse Prison, which is going to cost a lot of money, and which was shut because it's not fit for purpose, and it had been a real hotspot for human rights violations being committed against children. It's an example of a place, like a really brutal place that's absent the supports that kids need to help their lives, get their lives back on track. And as you know, Marissa, and as listeners probably also appreciate, jailing children causes immense and irreparable harm. It tears families and communities apart, and it really destroys their lives.
It really does. And indeed, I mean, I've had you and Sahini on before, and I think you've been on together, actually, about another matter some years ago.
I think ending strip searching, maybe.
That's right. Yeah, I think that's so. But look, it's been what a disaster all this is, honestly. I mean, if the Premier cared about children and community safety, wouldn't she invest in supports?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the evidence is really clear. And it's not a problem if, you know, the Premier doesn't have the evidence in front of her. Prevention, early intervention and diversion works, and imprisonment doesn't work. And, you know, we've been talking about what the government is and isn't willing to fund. The government has been cutting funding for, you know, the very support that helps stop contact between kids and the criminal legal system. So those are, you know, housing supports, mental health, alcohol and drug support, family violence support. So on one hand, they're cutting funding for those things, and then on the other, they're just punishing kids for the consequences of that. You know, true safety comes from those supports, not harsher sentences.
And also looking at the Victoria's human rights obligations, could you comment on that?
Yeah, well,
you go, Sahini, you go for it.
Well, under Victoria's own charter of human rights, as well as under international law, detention for children, imprisonment for children should be the last resort, and it should be for the shortest possible time possible, and children should always be treated in an age-appropriate way in the criminal legal system. And I think, you know, that reflects the fact that children's brains are still developing. They're at a really formative time in their lives, and, yeah, harsher laws and longer sentences are not going to deter them, they're not going to meet their needs, and they're just going to cause them a lot of harm.
And there is a Charter of Human Rights in Victoria. Doesn't that go against that as well?
Yeah, it's hard to see how a proposal like this is consistent with Victoria's own Charter of Human Rights. And it's pretty significant that the Premier is thinking about these changes that would be totally out of step with Victoria's human rights obligations.
Yeah, it's it beggars belief, doesn't it? And Monique, I see a quote here from you in the media release: "Children deserve care, not cages, and adult prison sentences."
Absolutely. We think that the government should scrap these laws and, as you spoke to at the start, really move away from this kind of reactionary, turbocharged, tough-on-crime politics that really doesn't work. The solution is always going to be building up the community supports that allow children to thrive in the community. And so instead of pouring you know, seemingly endless amounts of money into prisons and policing. We think that the Premier and her government should be supporting the services that we've spoken about, that Sohini just mentioned, that we know and that the evidence is really, really clear, supports children to thrive in the community rather than being pushed into prisons.
Monique and Sohini, thank you so much for coming onto the program. Are there any final comments that either of you would like to make?
I think that it's just really, really distressing that we live in a world with a government that has, like, no appetite to reimagine these systems, and that we're really stuck in a... It seems that we're stuck in a political headspace where we've got to resort to really, really punitive measures like the police and prisons as like a default response, and that it would just be really great to see a bit more vision and bravery and like bold policy that's led by evidence and that actually is going to create safer communities for all of us.
Well said, Monique. And Sohini and Monique, keep up the good work at the Human Rights Law Centre.
Thank you so much, Melissa.
Thank you so much, and both of you take care.
Thanks, bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Monique Hurley and Sohini Mita from the Human Rights Law Centre speaking about the very alarming... The very alarming adult time for violent crime bill, which is being proposed to go into Parliament. Next up, we'll be speaking with Karen Fletcher from Flat Out. And every woman, trans and gender diverse person deserves to live a life free from trauma, injustice and violence. Flat Out is a statewide advocacy and support service for women, trans and gender diverse people and their children who have been criminalised. And I'm really pleased to welcome Karen Fletcher, and I believe she's the CEO of Flat Out. Hello, Karen, welcome.
Hi, how are you going, Marissa?
So lovely to have you. It's been a long time.
It's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Karen, do you want to just start off just saying briefly what Flat Out is? And then I'd really like to talk about, you know, a couple of other things as well.
Yeah, well, Flat Out, as you said, is a service that supports women, trans and gender diverse people to get out and stay out of prison. Of course, a big part of what it takes to get out and stay out of prison is housing. So a lot of what we do is support people to try and get housing after prison, which in a housing crisis has become incredibly difficult. It's always been very difficult, but it is now almost impossible. So we're, like a lot of housing and homelessness services, we're seeing the people we support ending up homeless or in insecure housing, couch surfing with families, sometimes going back into violent situations. That's a real issue for us. We also support people to reunite with their children. You know, people lose their children when they go into prison, and we provide support for people to be reunited. And that's another thing that is extremely difficult to do without housing.
It really is. And the reason why I invited you onto the show is because the Do and Time show not only always goes back to colonisation, but we're also very committed to helping women in prison and post-release. And I think it's time that, you know, someone from Flat Out came on, just in case someone's listening that's been in prison, or even the listenership in prison. What would you say to people that had just got out of prison?
Look, I think it's really hard times for people coming out of prison, and it's particularly hard for First Nations people. Most people who go into prisons are already have housing difficulties. Most people come from situations of poverty. And even more people, when they time comes for them to leave prison, are facing homelessness on the outside, because they might have had a property when they went in, but to, you know, people who can lose everything when they go inside, and that can include their housing. And it's particularly the case for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who are very targeted and criminalised because of colonisation and because of the dispossession of communities and families. So not only are they more likely to go to prison, but they're also more likely to be homeless or in inadequate housing when they go inside, and more likely to be homeless when they're released, which means that they're much, much more at risk of going back inside, and you have that cycle. So I think it's really important to recognise that this is an issue that's influenced by race, particularly the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. And, you know, the question is asked, why isn't the gap closing? And the answer just seems obvious to us. It's because there is just not. There's more and more funding going into prisons and police and less going into public housing. I mean, in Victoria, public housing is being demolished. 10,000 people's homes are being demolished in the demolition of the public housing towers. And those people are going to be temporarily housed in other so-called community and social housing, and that means there's going to be even less housing available for homeless people coming out of prison and people who are homeless because of family violence or sexual violence or poverty.
And in fact, Aunty Vicky Roach, who we've interviewed quite a few times on this show, she's an example of all that.
Aunty Vicky, yes. Look, Aunty Vicky was saying to me recently that when she was, because she was in and out of prison in that cycle for quite a long time, and in the old days when she came out, she said she would register for housing and there would be housing, you know, at times available within 2 weeks.
Back then.
Now, these days, the waiting list for public housing, which is really the only kind of suitable housing for people in poverty because it's the only housing that's guaranteed at 25% of your income. The waiting list is 11, 12, 13 years. Years. And even for people on the priority list, like Aunty Vicky has been, now that she's an elder and she has serious health problems, it's taken, almost 3 years for us to get her housed. And I'm pleased to say that we are moving Auntie into community housing on the weekend, coming weekend.
In Melbourne?
Yes.
Oh, I'm glad she's moved back to Melbourne.
Yes.
That's fantastic. She's beautiful.
So that's taken a lot of time.
That's a long time.
And Auntie Vicky, you know, is a very, very respected elder. She's a teacher. She's a supporter of other women on the inside and coming out. She's written extensively. She's a poet and a writer and a journalist and a creative writer. And yet even for somebody like that on the priority list and with all of us advocating for her, it's taken 3 years for us to get her housed.
It's really bad.
And look, the other thing I would say, though, to people who are listening who have been in prison or are listening from prison is that another good thing that's happening in Victoria is the Fig Jam Collective, which is incarcerated girl justice activist Melbourne, Fig Jam, and which is a growing collective of formerly incarcerated women who are supporting each other and also advocating for each other and for all women who have been criminalised and for their children and for trans and gender diverse people. The group includes trans women. If you are interested in that, that's also something you could contact Flat Out about.
And can you give out some details for people to contact Flat Out?
Yeah, sure. I think probably the easiest thing to do is to go to our website, which is flatout.org.au, and that's got a contact. If you just click on contact there, you can just send us a message over the email. That's probably the easiest way.
Perfect. And I believe there was a rally as well, recent rally about public housing organised by Flat Out.
Well, Flat Out is a member of the Save Public Housing Collective.
Oh, yes. Yes, okay.
Yes, and we have been organising with them. They are, at the moment, rallying about evictions that are happening right now from public housing.
Sure.
And a couple of weeks ago, I spoke at a big public meeting at the Capitol Theatre with a whole bunch of architects and engineers and all sorts of people who were experts about why we should be refurbishing the towers, not demolishing them. So that might be also what you're thinking of. But, yeah, certainly
that's right.
Very active within the public housing campaign. I mean, public housing is absolutely essential for the folks that we work with.
Look, on the Do and Time show, we aim to provide a safe environment for all marginalised communities to come onto the show, and indeed we are here to build the movement to stop Aboriginal deaths in custody, and housing is an integral part of, you know, of the journey when someone leaves prison. So
100%.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always amazing to me, you know, when they report on the news. Pardon me. When they report on the news that the number of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander deaths in custody is on the increase, and what's the reason?
Yeah.
And look, the reason is because more and more Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are being criminalised and imprisoned because policing is intensifying across the country, including in Victoria. But also because it's just very difficult to get out of that cycle when you can't get housed, when you can't get safety with your family in your community. If you're just left homeless at the end of a prison sentence, you know, the cycle just intensifies and more people are caught in it. And, you know, what happens is the government spends more and more money on the prisons and the youth detention centres, and there's no money for housing, and there's no money for support like us. We haven't had an increase in our recurrent funding since we started in 1988. We got funded for 2.6 support workers, and that's what we still have. I mean, we get donations, and if your listeners have got any funds available, please also look at our website for donations. But we get donations, we get sometimes a couple of sort of philanthropic grants or short-term grants, but you know, the community sector is absolutely starved of funds, and so is public housing. Meanwhile, police budgets and prison budgets are increasing exponentially. This budget will have to have billions extra for prisons because of the changes to the bail laws and because of, you know, what's happening in the youth justice sector. I heard you were just talking to the Human Rights Law Centre about adult time for children and young people. That's going to require, you know, an expansion of prisons for children. That's more than $1 million a year to keep one child. Why isn't this money being spent on support for people so that we can rebuild our communities and get people housed and safe?
Exactly. Karen, thank you so much for coming onto the program. Cheerio also to Stacey and Nina, who've also been on the show.
Yep, I'll say good day to them.
And also, any woman who's been formerly incarcerated, please call Flat Out and join Fig Jam.
Please come and join Fig Jam. They're a great group.
Thanks a lot, Karen.
Thank you.
Keep up the good work.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that was Karen Fletcher, CEO of Flat Out. And she was talking about a number of issues in regards to not just public housing, but also incarceration of women in prison.
Help us stay radical. Become a regular donor to 3CR. A regular donor is someone who loves 3CR so much that they set up an automatic donation to 3CR on the same day every month. 3CR is determined to stay independent. This means we don't rely on corporate sponsorship or government funding. We serve our community, not corporate interests. But this also means we do rely on people like you to keep the station running. From paying the bills to maintaining our studios to training the next generation of community broadcasters, 3CR relies on community donations to survive. By becoming a regular donor, you can help us stay resilient and radical. Will you help 3CR by becoming a regular donor today? Together, we can keep independent voices on air. Go to 3cr.org.au.
And in case you've just tuned in, this is the Do and Time show with Marissa. and it's approximately 4:30. Youth law slams rushed and harmful youth justice overhaul. Under the proposed changes, children aged 14 to 17 who commit certain serious offences could be sentenced as adults. The laws will apply to offences including aggravated home invasion, intentionally or recklessly causing injury in circumstances of gross violence, carjacking, and serious or repeat aggravated burglary and armed robbery. Currently, the maximum sentence that can be imposed in the Children's Court is 3 years for a single offence. These reforms would mean that a 14-year-old child could face life imprisonment, ending Victoria's long-held principle that children should be treated differently to adults in the criminal legal system. I'm excited to welcome Lee Carney, CEO from Youth Law, to the program. Hello, Lee. How are you?
I'm going okay, Marissa. Thanks so much for having us on today's show.
Lovely to have you. And I think I've interviewed you before on numerous occasions, actually, over the years.
I think so. And I wish there were better circumstances than the announcement that we heard from the Victorian Premier last week.
Indeed. And, you know, this show is dedicated to children and young people. I've done a couple of interviews today, in particular with the Human Rights Law Centre, at the beginning of the show. But I suppose I wanted to start off and talk to you about what's happening with this proposed overhaul and how's that going to affect young children?
There's a range of policy changes that are very significant that were announced just last week. What's very concerning is that Aboriginal leaders, community organisations, legal experts weren't consulted by the government before these were announced. They're going to have wide-ranging impacts. A large number of children, lots of these children are children who've had out-of-home care experience, who have traumatic life experiences, who are now facing most likely around 20 years in prison. So some of the changes that have been announced include removing imprisonment as a last resort for children. This is a key obligation that the Australian government has under the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child. The Victorian government has proposed that it will remove from our Youth Justice Act here in Victoria. They've also announced that they will be sentencing 14 to 17-year-old children in the Adults County Court instead of the Specialist Children's Court, where children's court judges are trained on how to talk to young people and children who are under the age of 18 to make sure that they really understand what's happening, that they're involved. And importantly, in the children's court, the focus is on rehabilitating children to return to school, to sports and hobbies, pro-social activities in our communities. Those requirements for judges to really consider rehabilitation don't exist in the same way in the adult county court. The other thing that's going to create a massive impact on so many of these vulnerable children is the increase in sentences for these seven serious violent offences. So extending the maximum term of imprisonment from 25 years in most cases to life imprisonment. So what you're seeing here is a possibility of a child as young as 14 years of age potentially spending the rest of their life in prison with these reforms.
There is one aspect that I wanted to talk to you about, Lee, and it's something I think that the mainstream media has discussed a lot. And I wanted to hear what Youth Law had to say about this. So the laws will ultimately apply to offences including aggravated home invasion, intentionally or recklessly causing injury, in circumstances of gross violence, carjacking, and serious or repeat aggravated burglary and armed robbery. Now, one of the things that has come out in mainstream media reports is that questions are always asked about community safety. Now, obviously, Lee, it is horrible. These crimes are very horrible, aren't they? And, you know, no one wants their home broken into. I've actually had friends that have had their cars carjacked and stabbed, and people have been stabbed. But even though these crimes are horrific, can you comment or tell us, instead of hearing all this rhetoric about, you know, that teenagers are horrible and, you know, they need to be locked away, can you shed some light on how we can actually stop this cycle?
Thank you for this question, because it is so important.
We need to talk about it, you know, but rationally and sensibly.
Absolutely. And by looking at the evidence that's available, we know that you don't stop crime by destroying children's futures. Of course, these types of crimes are understandably making members of our community concerned about their safety, but if you're serious about preventing crime, then the only solution that is evidence-based, that is backed up by research that we know works, is supporting children early to turn their lives around. We keep communities safe by building supportive pathways for children away from the justice system, not by locking them up and throwing away the key.
So what would we do?
So we know that the answer is investing in early wraparound, legal and social support for these children the moment they start to show signs of getting into trouble. So what we see at Youth Law, for example, is when we get early contact with children, often what happens is they started being suspended or expelled from school. There's often a much higher risk of later involvement in these kinds of serious violent offences if they have lived experience of serious family violence in the home, if they have child protection involvement, out-of-home care involvement, because they've grown up experiencing violence, and so that's been normalised for them, and they've grown up with a significant amount of trauma, and they need care and support to heal from that and to move on with their lives. And the reality is that too many children don't get that support early when they need it. They don't get the intervention that they need to support them if they have, for example, disabilities, to stay engaged in school and education, for them to have a safe place to go to if their living situation is just not safe for them. The other thing that the Victorian government announced last week was a new bill increasing penalties for gangs and adults, you know, members of the community recruiting children to commit these kinds of violent crimes. Because what we see is children who don't feel safe at home, who don't feel safe at resi care or other out-of-home care options, turning to older people who are involved in crimes, hanging out with them because they feel safe with them, and then, unfortunately, often getting drawn into these kinds of crimes that they don't want to commit but they feel like they have no choice.
And this is exactly the point that I want to arrive at in this interview, that these things need to be tackled, and the laws were rushed through, weren't they, without consultation with youth justice experts, lawyers, or community organisations who work directly with affected young people.
That's right. I think the lack of consultation is really concerning, because it's these frontline services who work with young people who know that with the right support, stable housing, access to school, mental health care, culturally safe mentoring, children in these kinds of situations can really turn their lives around. It's a real shame that what we're seeing in Victoria is these reforms which focus on punishment after the fact, rather than looking at the real problem here, which is catching children before they fall through the cracks.
I'd like to expand on the point that you made about children being with older people, because obviously these children crave family, and so they feel like they can belong to a family if the older people get them to commit the crime. Is that right?
I think it's often about safety and protection, right?
Yeah.
Children who end up in youth prisons are often victims of trauma, family violence and neglect. And children who commit crimes after being victims of crime themselves need rehabilitation, they need education and support. And when they're not getting it, you know, schools are under-resourced, frontline services are under-resourced, it can be really hard, even though we try as much as we can, to connect children in with mental health care, with alcohol and drug treatment and counselling. Sometimes the wait lists for services are months and months long. And so if they're not getting the support that they need from school, from community organisations, because they're not receiving sufficient government funding, then often what happens is someone else will come along and give them an option and say, hey, we'll keep you safe. But there are obviously strings attached, which can lead to children getting roped into things that spiral out of control. And before they know it, facing these prison sentences, which will really destroy their lives.
Exactly. And where are the drop-in centres? Where are the youth services, the 24-hour, places where children can go to have a meal and be safe? I'm not talking about the Salvation Army here. I'm talking about, youth services that need to be around the clock to help young people.
I couldn't agree with you more. And it's something that UCL's been advocating for a long time, but many community organisations have been advocating for a long time. Now in Victoria, 10 and 11-year-olds aren't going to be criminalised when they get into trouble by police, but 12 and 13-year-olds, similarly, there should be a place where if there's a 12 or 13-year-old, they're acting up and they need support, or they don't have a meal or a safe roof over their head, they can go somewhere anytime, 24 hours, to speak to a worker, to get a safe bed, to get a free meal. And we just don't have those 24-hour services for children in Victoria, and we should. We have enough money to do it. It's about how the Victorian government is choosing to prioritise our resources and investing, for example, huge amounts into the pointy end of the enforcement system through Victoria Police, instead of the early intervention and prevention, instead of community support that will prevent crimes from occurring in the first place.
So basically, Youth Law is calling on the Victorian government to immediately halt the proposed legislation. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, so we are really hoping that the Victorian government will hear from the backlash that they've received from, you know, from our organisation, but from Aboriginal community leaders, from various commissioners and academics and legal experts who are all saying the same thing, which is these changes will have life-changing consequences for children, that instead of punishing this cohort of children, what they need to do is invest in early intervention and prevention to support these kids earlier on, before these crimes are being committed.
It's an absolute atrocity, Lee. Are there any other comments that you'd like to make before we conclude our interview?
Thank you so much for giving air to this issue. I think what we really want the listeners to hear is that the evidence here is really so strong and so clear. I think there's been a lot of media reporting that has muddied the waters, but what we want everyone to understand is that you just can't punish trauma out of a child. Most of these kids who are committing serious offences, we acknowledge that they are very serious, they have significant impact on people's lives and their feelings of safety, but most of these children have experienced extreme violence, abuse and neglect themselves, and they need intensive support and accountability, not a life behind bars.
I mean, seriously, if you put young people, let's be really honest here, right? You put young children and young people in an adult prison, the adults will have them for breakfast. They will have them for breakfast, Lee, and yeah, They'll come out worse than what they were before.
Yeah. I mean, your show has covered this a number of times before. We know that prisons are a breeding ground for more crimes, that there's no rehabilitation that happens in a prison context. If we're serious about rehabilitation and it's supporting children who've experienced violence, then prison is never the answer.
And prison should be a last resort. That's the principle that the government had, and not now.
Exactly. So removing this principle from Victorian laws will have such massive ongoing impact in terms of how judges consider these cases. This is a fundamental human rights safeguard, ensuring that we are only depriving children of their liberty in situations where it is the absolute last resort, where everything else has been tried and failed. And what is so, I think, unjust about these laws is that these children haven't been given all of the options because they haven't received the support that they needed earlier. But they're still being locked up anyway. They're still being punished.
Lee, thank you so much for coming onto the program. It was great to have you. So pretty soon we're going to be nearing the end of our show. But before I go, I don't know when I can ring you, I wanted to speak to you off air at some stage about a young person that I'm working with and I'm particularly concerned about them. Can I call you after the show?
Always. And for any listeners as well, if there are any children or young people in Victoria who need free legal help or advice, you can always get in touch. We're at www.youthlaw.asn.au. But Marissa, also feel free to give me a call.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Lee, and let's watch this space. Just one final thing. Also, the proposed legislation, when does it go before Parliament?
We're not entirely sure, but the Premier said last week that the government's plan is to introduce the bill before the end of the year. So it looks like it'll either have to be this week or the first week of December. So we haven't seen the details of the bill. We've heard what it will do, but when it comes out, we'll continue to advocate against these reforms and hope that the Victorian government heeds our calls and really pauses and halts and decides to invest in supporting children's futures instead.
Thanks a lot, Lee. Take good care. Keep up the good work.
Thanks so much for having me.
Bye-bye. And that was Lee Carney, CEO of Youth Law, speaking about Victoria's proposed legislation, which is the Adult Crime Bill. And also, Adult Time for Violent Crime Bill. Also, while we're on the subject of discriminatory policing and other issues, just wanted to encourage people to rock up to the rally tomorrow. And it's a rally, I don't have it all in front of me, but it's a rally in regards to the police powers that that are coming through, and yeah, rock up to Parliament at 5:30, and live, you know, show your power, if you like, because it's about criminalising dissent. I'll be doing a report back next week about that anyway.
Help us stay radical. Become a regular donor to 3CR. A regular donor is someone who loves 3CR so much that they set up an automatic donation to 3CR on the same day every month. 3CR is determined to stay independent. This means we don't rely on corporate sponsorship or government funding. We serve our community, not corporate interests. But this also means we do rely on people like you to keep the station running. From paying the bills to maintaining our studios to training the next generation of community broadcasters, 3CR relies on community donations to survive. By becoming a regular donor, you can help us stay resilient and radical. Will you help 3CR by becoming a regular donor today? Together, we can keep independent voices on air. Go to 3cr.org.au.
Telling the Albanese government how to protect nature might feel a bit like teaching them to suck eggs. But too often, governments side with big corporations over your health, your climate, and your children's future. As they rewrite Australia's nature law, they must close deforestation loopholes and protect threatened species. It's literally their job. Head to wilderness.org.au/suckeggs to demand laws that put nature and our future first. The Wilderness Society is a 3CR supporter.
the sunsets and whisper to the sky. Be kind, my darling, it'll only be a while. The sky gets dark, but the moon, she's my friend. And the stars that fill the sky tell stories of past and present. The trees whistle tunes only they would know, whispering to the wind as she flies through the air. Lullaby, where were you when I was down? Beckon and beckon me now. And now I hide Hello, my friend, it's nice to see you again. Oh, we've had lots of fun, but now our time is up. Oh, and the bird said to the beast, love me endlessly. Memories won't escape, but what is memories when people change? And the heart whispered to the ears, listen closely. You'll never know what you hear. And the ear said to the mouth, say it slowly, slowly, so he can hear when you're gonna go. The trees whistle tunes only they would know, whispering to the wind as she flies through the air. Lullaby, where were you when I was down? Beckon and beckon.
And it's approximately 4:55, and we're just about nearing the end of the show now, and that was a beautiful song called Lullaby by Emily Wallara. And I wanted to thank all our guests for coming onto the show today, and I wanted to let people know that I'll be doing a lot more work in regards to what's happening with children and young people in the youth justice system. But in the meantime, try to rock up to the rally tomorrow at 5:30. Google Police Powers. And it's really about criminalising dissent and the right to protest as well. So try to rock up to that. And we've got about a minute left and I'm out of here. Stay tuned every Monday for the Do and Time show from 4 to 5. Bye. Stay safe.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.